Welcome to the Album Nerds Podcast with your hosts, Andy, Don, and Dude.
It's a sunshine day here at the Album Nerds Podcast. It's summertime. This is Dude, and I've got Andy and Don with me. You soaking in the rays, boys?
Yes, indeed, sir. Got a feeling some of those LA sunshine today.
Nice. I've been spending most of my time under the bridge.
I bet you have.
A little shady down there.
Hanging with the trolls. Yeah, I basically wrap myself in foil this time of year to avoid skin cancer.
Baking like a potato over there, man? What are you doing?
Yeah, slather myself in butter and then wrap up in foil. That's the best way to do it. You get a tan, just not directly from the sun. And you smell delicious. Okay, so this is the Album Nerds Podcast. We love albums, the album format, talking about them, thinking about them, and sometimes obsessing. We've got a great show for you. Summer of Don is back on schedule, so we'll be talking about the Red Hot Chili Peppers' Blood Sugar Sex Magik, which was on his list of albums he'd like to talk about that Andy and I talked about on previous shows before Don joined us. We throw it on that wheel of musical discovery, and she tells us which of those albums we'll be focusing on. Then Don's going to ask us a deep question. We're going to get some shout outs for some albums and album related items that we're digging. And then we're going to spin that wheel of musical discovery to see where this beautiful summer is going to take us. But this time it's all about those Red Hot Chili Peppers.
I proclaim this the summer of
Donny Lakey.
That's what I'm talking about.
Well, Blood Sugar Sex Magik was released in 1991. It's the fifth studio album by the band formed in Los Angeles in 1982. Of course, the Red Hot Chili Peppers. The lineup was Anthony Kiedis on vocals, John Frusciante on guitars, Flea, also born Michael Peter Belzari on bass, and Chad Smith on drums. The album was recorded in a mansion supposedly once lived in by Harry Houdini with producer Rick Rubin. Let's hear the lead single. This is Give It Away.
Do you guys remember people trying to do that give it away yeah. thing? Not contests exactly, but sort of like some proof that you're better than your fellow music fans if you could do it.
Yeah, I mean, hip-hop was just coming up. I mean, I feel like that was bleeding over a little bit there to some degree. And yeah, I don't know if it still holds up too well all these years later.
Yeah, I think for some reason I thought it was really, you know, funky and fresh. But now, like, lyrically, it's just complete gibberish for the most part, I think. I mean, Don, what's this about, right? What's this song about?
Supposedly it was inspired by his then-girlfriend, Nina Hagen, about her, like, altruistic behavior. You know, so she was kind of, you know, you don't need possessions, you know.
That's because she's a Hagen. She comes from the Haagen-Dazs family. And
very generous, the Haagen-Dazs.
Yeah, yes. Oh, yeah.
All the ice cream you could possibly want.
They give it away.
Yeah.
That's what it's about.
Yeah. Yeah. But I don't know why Bob Marley's working in his office or whatever it is.
He does a lot about Bob Marley. It's a whole verse, right?
Yeah. Feels like maybe he was watching TV while he was recording the song and just whoever was on the screen is what came up next.
I gotta say, like, for, like, you know, rock and metal at the time, these lyrics are, like, really positive in comparison. I mean,
right,
a song about altruism in 1991, and even today, that would stand out, I would say, generally. So, good on you, Anthony Kiedis. Maybe you're a little bit awkward, but at least you're a positive message.
True, true. And it's an infectious sounding song. I mean, the bass lines and the guitar stuff that John was doing, I mean, it's... A lot of people like the song. It doesn't matter what's lyrically.
About. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's kind of that's part of their magic as a band and on this record. So,
yeah. It's more about can you bob your head to it and does it make any sense?
Not completely unlike the Black Crowes that we talked about, where it's more about the music, although these lyrics are even hararder to decipher.
Mm. I think my favorite part of the song is actually that reversed guitar part.
Yeah.
It's just a really cool, you know, break in between the verses.
How does that go? Well, Okay. I don't know. That was perfect. That's what I was hoping for.
I wish y'all could see Don's face when he did it's that.
Like in reverse.
I was acting like I was moving backwards at the time.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's hear another track. This is Under the Bridge.
I don't ever want to feel like I did that day. Take me to the place I love. Take me all the way.
All right, Under the Bridge was the second single off the album and ended up being the band's biggest commercial hit. Spent 26 weeks on the Hot 100. For me, for my money, that's the song I remember most from this album. I was a young lad growing up, and this is one of the first songs I remember like really falling in love with that was on the radio. And coming back to it today, like it still sounds great to me. I absolutely love the vocal performance works. The guitar is just awesome. The whole thing just coalesces beautifully on that track. My clickbait headline for this album is Blood Sugar Sex Magic is a tasty piece of candy rolling across a dirty floor.
Okay.
This album, there's like a center to it that's like a delicious little nugget of tasty music, but there's a lot of crap that's like collected and rolled around.
It could have been a tasty piece of hard candy found in the bottom of your grandmother's purse that would have worked as well.
Yeah, from like 12 years ago or
all
something.
All linty.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, the record's kind of messy, but I do enjoy the heart of it, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, the song here seems to be largely about Kiedis's struggle with addiction. I believe at this time he had kind of cleaned up his heroin troubles, but was still dealing with kind of the, you know, just kind of being in a band, and I imagine that's quite prevalent around you at the time. But it's interesting, he ties it back to the city of Los Angeles as kind of being like his rock, like his...
Safe space.
Safe space. Yeah, exactly. Touchdown. That's what we're going for. Kind of, maybe not. Exactly. But I thought that was interesting. Kind of reminded me of L.A. Woman we were talking about a while back with the Doors that are kind of coming back to the city as kind of being the beginning and end of things. For the Chili Peppers, it's definitely, I always associate them with Los Angeles for whatever reason. Palm trees, sunshine.
Drugs.
Lack of clothes. Yeah.
Yes. Drugs. Socks. Socks on their gear. Yeah, yes. I mean, I always kind of viewed it as more of the side of it where it's about the city of Los Angeles, but that she's good for him and bad for him is the way I always kind of viewed it, you know, that he loves her, but she hurts him. Kind of, you know, the dark place is under the bridge is a dark place, you know, where you buy drugs but then out on the streets is where she's his companion. So it's this relationship, not just that the city is his touchstone, thanks God, but that it's this long-term relationship.
Yeah, the good and the bad all wrapped up together.
But it's the city of angels, right? And so they probably, you know, the angels saved him.
Yes, oh, that's because Los Angeles is the name, and Angeles means angels.
Wow, we're getting some deep points here, man.
Boom. Wait, everyone listening in your cars, pull over. Let your brain explode for a minute.
Yeah. I don't know if Under the Bridge could have existed on Mother's Milk. I don't know if the band was formed enough, in particular the guitar players, or, you know, sophisticated. It feels like they give this album at times moments to breathe where we didn't really get that on previous albums. And when they do that, it's beautiful. Like, John Frusciante is a fantastic guitar player, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the Rick Rubin, you know, that's kind of
the Rubin of it all.
Yeah, that's his deal.
I guess, I can't remember the producer on Mother's Milk, but supposedly he was really pushing Frusciante to play more like a metal sound. And I guess, you know, it just was, Frusciante was not happy with his work at all on that album. And I think, you know, this is what he really wanted to do.
It's funny. That's what I like about Mother's Milk is that it has the funky stuff that they love to do and had been doing for albums before this, but that it leans more alternative rock here and there. I like it when they make rock band sounds. Mm-hmm. I think it helps mix things up. I don't, when it's too much funk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. It creates such a muddy mix for me on that record. Like, it's hard to hear all the instruments. I think Ruben does a nice job of really spacing the band out here, because the Flea is like such an integral part and he's can be so dominating in the mix. I think it's nice to have everybody kind of in their four corners of the space, I think.
All right. Well, here's some more metal sounding guitar. This is The Righteous and the Wicked. So we don't hear the lyrics there, but in the song it says the righteous and the wicked of the war and peace, the killing fist of the human beast. So, about humanity and its propensity for war. Yeah, I enjoy that track because it kind of starts off with that little funky bass line, but then you've got these kind of metal guitar, kind of fuzzed out guitar on it. So interesting song. My clickbait headline for this record is Flea and Frusciante create magic, making Kiedis ancillary. Whoa. So I found
Kiedis.
Yeah, well, and I'm not dissing.
Oh, God, don't say dissing.
I'm not dissing. No. Just kidding. Yeah, it's not even a knock on Anthony Kiedis. But when I'm listening to this record, I end up just being drawn in by the guitar and the bass. And then so I would just say, I should pay attention to the vocals now. And I would try. And then, I would kind of lose my way again and be back to the guitar and bass.
I think it kind of circles back to what we were saying at the beginning, where it's the music that drives this. It's the sound. And then Anthony Kiedis's lyrics, the things that stick are a couple of lines, right? For the most part, I don't know all the words to all the songs, but I know the lines that mean something to me.
Yeah.
And those are the things that get stuck in my head. But it is the groove that drives their sound, especially on this record.
Yeah.
I guess I never appreciated it or how gifted these two guys are. Flea is just this innovative bass player informed by funk and psychedelia.
Punk, and jazz.
And jazz, yeah, right. His dad was a jazz musician. So Frusciante, is just awesome as well. But what's great about it is, he really allows Flea the space to do his thing. And his guitar lines don't conflict. They complement him. And I can't imagine somebody like Eddie Van Halen playing with Flea and giving a bass player that space, And so I really think that's, maybe Frusciante's gift, the ability to play with somebody like that.
He also was a bit younger than them, had been a fan of the band, and they lost their guitar player to a drug overdose. Mm-hmm. So they brought this kid on that had been at all their shows and knew how to play their songs and stuff. So I think there was the dynamic may have fed that, that the big dogs were Anthony and Flea and Chad at that point. But yeah, it feels kind of more of a passive role until it's like, okay, John, do your thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And he does take advantage of those moments. All right, well, let's hear another one. Here's Breaking the Girl.
I like how different that song sounds than the rest. Mm-hmm. And it is more in an experimental alternative rock kind of vibe. The percussion at the bridge where they're banging on hubcaps and whatever else, it just is a moment in this calm song about Kiedis's former girlfriend, Carmen Hawk.
God, how many girlfriends did he have? Even Sinead O'Connor, I think, that the one...
Every song is like another girlfriend, this guy.
Yeah, I could have lied. I think might have had something to do with his relationship with Sinead O'Connor. Yeah, sorry.
Wow. Anthony. Jeez. Big dog.
You're naughty.
Yeah, but the calmness of that track and the sort of psychedelia of it, I love the chaos, and that could represent the chaos in a relationship, and that breakup and all that stuff. So my clickbait headline to describe Blood Sugar Sex Magic: a love roller coaster of hits and misses, making this album both a masterpiece and a mess, which I think we've kind of hinted at already. I feel like I kind of prefer the more measured approaches on Mother's Milk and Californication, even though Rick Rubin also did produce Californication. There was more direction there. This album is so scattered because I think Rubin was letting them experiment, but 77 minutes, 8 of which is taken up by the unnecessary Sir Psycho Sexy, in my opinion.
I like that one.
Really?
I like it okay. Like, it would be great if it had showed up in a movie soundtrack or something, or a bonus track, but I don't get it as far as 8 minutes, you know, towards the end of the record.
I was kind of looking forward to them kind of airing it out, like kind of jamming. So I think that's kind of their opportunity. But it isn't really welcome on track 16 or whatever it is, you know, at that point. An 8-minute jam is not right. If it was earlier in the record or on a shorter record, I think it would be more appreciated.
Yeah, if we scratch that in Apache Rose Peacock, then I think this would be a tighter record. You know what I mean?
No, I totally agree. No, I listened, my version of the album ends after Naked in the Rain. First 12 tracks, it's like 57 minutes. It's perfect at that length. They need more. It's a bad time for editing in music generally. Like, everybody's trying to fill this CD format, you know, and I think they were kind of a victim of that.
I like track 17, they're Red Hot, which could have been like one of those extra bonus unlisted tracks.
Yeah.
They're Red Hot. You know, it's kind of fun. You know, they're a fun band, so it's cool to have a little fun thing at the end.
It's a little reward making it through all the dirtiness. The messiness before.
Yeah, but Apache Rose Peacock is just eerie at this point. Like, I thought it was kind of like, whoa, 30 years ago, but now I'm like, no.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel this way almost every Chili Peppers record. There's like one or two songs that just stick out like, what? What happened there?
Well, yeah. I just don't really ever want to hear in any song the line, "My dick got hard." Like, that's just not... I don't think anyone wants to hear that, but I could be wrong. Yeah,
Kiedis is not too big on the subtleties when it comes to his sexual proclivities. Yeah.
Well, sounds like, you know, this could be an interesting question. Does this belong in the Album Nerds Hall of Fame? I'm going to say yes. So I'm nominating the Red Hot Chili Peppers' Blood Sugar Sex Magic for the Album Nerds Hall of Fame. So, this is sort of my era, right? And, you know, I think back to that period between like 90 and 92, and there's so many big albums out there, you know, Nirvana, Nevermind, Pearl Jam, the Black Album, Metallica.
Popular music was changing a lot quickly.
I agree that this is not a perfect album. It's bloated, but I just think it's a significant album. I think I feel like 90% of the men who are my age or in my ballpark own this record. I think it probably influenced a lot of people and influenced music to come. So I'm going to say, you know, this belongs in the Album Nerds Hall of Fame.
Damn it, Don. You know, you're kind of loose with the nominations these days.
Spread them all over town like you're giving away.
This is a big album, though.
I know, man. And at the time, I was like, this is a classic. Like, when it was popular, I'm like, this is going to be a historically remembered record, a significant record. And now, listening to it, I see a lot more holes than I used to. They're significant as a band. They have definitely had an impact. But this album is, without the singles, I don't think there's a lot of foundation there. And even though I do enjoy it and I love them, I'm going to say no.
Wow. A no from dude. Right out of the gate. That's count that on one hand in times that's happened.
I could be sold on some of their other albums, but...
All right. So I need to say yes now, apparently. Okay. Let me see.
You don't have to.
Yeah, I was a pretty big fan of these guys growing up. I had a few of their records. I have soured on them over the years, generally. I still enjoy, I think this is probably their peak, in my opinion, like in terms of creative power. I feel like they were operating at their best here, but it's a really messy record. It feels like the misses are such big misses to me that I don't know if I could put it in the Hall of Fame. And there's like a few of them that are really bad, in my opinion. Something else I know too, but I, you know, it's ballpark. Mm. Kind of.
In other words, Anthony, suck my kiss.
Now, we should give the listeners an opportunity to override, shouldn't they? I mean,
okay, well, yeah, let's give the audience a chance, but, you know, because two of you voted against it, we're going to make a simple majority won't work, right? We're going to need two-thirds, right? So two-thirds of you need to say yes, and they'll be in the Hall of Fame.
And I won't hate you for it. I mean, I could see a case for it. I just couldn't get there this morning.
I'll probably hold it against whoever votes yes, just to put it out there.
All right. Well, the album was The Red Hot Chili Peppers with Blood Sugar Sex Magic from 1991.
Excuse me. I'd like to ask you a few questions.
All right. Well, this might be the deepest question so far ever.
Oh, man. It's so penetrating.
So, you know, Anthony Kiedis has a pretty distinct yeah.
Oh, yeah. Says,
yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 What are your favorite yeahs in the world of music or film or wherever?
Yeah, this is deep down. I mean, man, I don't know. I mean, all right, so the yeah that came to mind for me first was maybe not the most infamous yeah, but one I've found comfort in over the years, and that would be Jimi Hendrix. Yeah. He's got like a back of the throat kind of like yeah, yeah. Kind of yeah. That yeah. I was just like, I don't know. I always think he's an underrated vocalist. He's not a great vocalist, but it's a comforting vocal.
It's not unlike Jim Morrison, where it's blues-based delivery, but it's sort of speaking, but not quite.
Blues-based, yeah. It just feels so cool and chilled out. And yeah. I like a good yeah.
So, yeah. My favorite yeah. I mean, I've got a lot of them. There's this.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's a good one.
Oh, is a Macho Man?
Yes.
Yep. There's this. That's a great yeah.
That's a great yeah.
Yeah, boy.
There's that. I mean, there's a lot of yeahs out there.
Flavor Flav.
And we can't forget.
Those are good ones.
But my favorite, yeah, it's going to be no surprise to anyone.
I recognize that, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We got some James Hetfield from Metallica. His yeahs have become stuff of legend. I mean, they without them, the songs wouldn't be what they are. I mean, they are
like 3 minutes shorter.
They're integral lyrical pieces. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
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 He gets a lot of syllables out of one, yeah. It's impressive.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh. So when we're done here, it would behoove our listeners to throw us on Instagram how many yeahs they count during this segment.
Well, I have a very obscure example. Have you guys ever seen the movie About Last Night from 1986? It had Rob Lowe, Jim Belushi, Demi Moore. Well, anyway, there's a scene at the end. Rob Lowe is, you know, hung up on Demi Moore, and, you know, who wouldn't be? But Jim Belushi is kind of this meathead guy, and he's saying, don't let this chick bring you down. And I'm quoting here, so don't blame me, but he's like, tits and ass, tits and ass, tits and ass. And then Rob Lowe responds, but I love her, or something like that. You know, I love her, man, or something. And Jim Belushi goes, yeah.
Yeah. Wow, that's a deep one.
But I just, and it sticks with me. Like I, you know, say it to my wife and stuff like that. Yeah. Anyway.
You know, we all missed something obvious.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. That's a good one.
Kool-Aid Man.
Yeah. All right.
Well, what are your favorite yeahs? Let us know. Hit us on the socials, Facebook, Instagram, and Threads. Also on our website, albumnerds.com.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
More yeahs.
Yeah. They're everywhere. You start seeing them, you can't stop.
Well, in the midst of all that blood sugar and sex magic, did you guys find anything else to listen to this week?
Oh, you know, I did, Don. I got a couple things in my sock here. I'm going to show you guys.
He has to use a Christmas stocking.
That's right. All right. First one up for me is from a singer-songwriter from Athens, Georgia, by the name of Madeline Perot, I believe is how you say your last name. The album is called Let's Walk. You can play the title cut.
We let it go. Let's walk.
Let's walk.
Wow.
Let's walk. Let's walk.
This is, looking at the cover, this is not what I expect.
It's got a Sesame Street vibe.
I thought it'd be like a indie rock type of thing. I don't know. Yeah, this does sound like it's a Sesame Street.
Yeah, no, it's kind of a... I don't know. It's got kind of a throwback sound, I would say. Very simple, as Don was alluding to. I really like it. It's a real charm to her songwriting. She's got kind of a quirky personality, kind of funny. It's her 9th studio album, blues and jazz primarily. All right, next one up for me is from a punk rock group from England by the name of Softplay. They have a new album out called Heavy Jelly. This is the second track, Punk's Dead.
That was on my list too, Dad, Andy.
It was Angry Brits.
Yeah, I really like this record too.
Yeah, it sounds pretty cool.
I'm not sure I'm ready for this jelly.
It's pretty bootylicious when you get to the end, though.
Yeah. So it's the first album as Softplay. They were formerly called Slaves, apparently.
Yeah, that's not a good name.
Not a great name. Apparently they did a rebrand after that one. But they're back.
In 22, they changed their name?
Yeah, recently.
Yeah.
All right, last one for me is a black metal group called... I say they're called Ackles? How would you say that, Don?
Maybe. Or Ockles. Ockles, yeah.
Ockles? Ockles sounds good, actually.
It could be Ockles. I don't know.
Yeah. Let's go with Ockles. The name of the album is House of the Black Geminis, I believe is how you would say that.
Why do you do this to yourself?
This is an intense record. Prepare yourself for this clip. If you're driving, you might want to pull over.
And what's the song?
Maze of the Prohibitor, I think is how you would say that.
I think it's Maze of Phobitor. It's Phobetor.
Yeah, a lot of mythology references, I think, here, maybe. Okay. I'm not sure.
It sounds more like Interference than music.
There's momentary pauses for screaming. No, this one's pretty interesting.
But not night music for the kids?
Not so much the Sesame Street vibe here. Couldn't find much on this group, but their Bandcamp page says that the band was created to serve as a voice for the muse that arises from the dark lands between death and the dreams through chilling ambient darkness.
Oh, yeah, that's what I got too.
Yeah, me too. What you been digging on, Don?
Well, do you fellas remember, it was during February, I think it might have been Sensual Serenades, we did Cigarettes After Sex.
Yes.
Well, they have their third album out now. They're from El Paso. Basically, it's this guy, Greg Gonzalez, you know, kind of that dream poppy, you know, treatment. Here's a song called Dark Vacay. Pretty much the same kind of thing, but I don't know. I'm still digging it.
I'm seeing a lot of buzz about this one. Like, I've seen a lot of Instagram entries and things about people being excited about this. So,
yeah, you got cigarettes, you got sex. What's not to love?
You got blood, you got sugar, magic.
Right, another band. I hadn't spent any time with them before. An all country man called Beechwood Sparks. Their fourth album is called Across the River of Stars. They're from Los Angeles, formed in the mid-1990s. This is their first album since 2012, produced by Chris Robinson from the Black Crowes.
Oh, there you go.
Oh. Here's a song called Torn in Two.
Cool.
All right. Well, I think I told you guys that I had read the Robin Hitchcock, you know, memoir that just came out. And one album he actually mentioned is The 5,000 Spirits or The Layers of the Onion by the Incredible String Band. Came out in 1967. It's not a band I spent any time with, but I've always kind of liked sort of psychedelic sounds. These guys are from Scotland, psychedelic folk band. Basically, Mike Heron and Robin Williamson. Here's the Hedgehog song. Sing me this song.
Oh, yeah, no. All the words and yes, all the notes. Little Cat Stevens-y, right?
Yeah, but goofier.
Yeah, sounds interesting.
Really good. You know, kind of silly, goofy stuff. Sort of, obviously, you know, something Robin Hitchcock would like.
I'll have to check it out.
Dude.
You know, we talked about the Blood Sugar Sex Magic there, and we had spoken of that on episode 122, where we also talked about Mac Leephart, who's a country artist that I'm a big fan of. Sort of Americana country, rock blend, John Prine, Guy Clark, Towns Van Zandt, that kind of vibe. Mm-hmm. Got a new album coming out in September, and here's the first single, Rock and Roll Hay. What ails you, let the good times roll the bad away.
Hey, instead of yeah.
That's weird.
I smell a little Tom Petty in there too.
Oh yeah, definitely. How has no one ever come up with that before? I feel like that's pretty good. Rock and roll, hey.
Yeah,
it's good.
I dig it. I mean, I already have the album because I, you know, did the crowdfunding thing. So I have a signed copy on vinyl. It's really good. It's called Motel Breakfast. It'll be coming out, I believe, September 13 on all the streaming platforms. So in the meantime, go check out Mac Leapheart's other records, including one of my favorites from a few years ago, Music City Joke. All right, so next... You know, in listening to the Chili Peppers, I listened to some of their older albums. I listened to some things that would have influenced them. And then I started thinking about what bands were influenced by that sound. And I thought of Incubus.
Yeah.
And then I thought of an album I liked in 2001 called Morning View. Let's play a little bit of Nice to Know You. Now, to a fan, you might notice a little different. This is Morning View 23. So 23 years after the release, they re-recorded the album. And so the vocals sound a little different. The arrangements are slightly changed. So I accidentally played this one first. I'm like, this sounds off.
Yeah.
You know, because they've been playing these songs live for so long, they've changed.
Huh.
It sounds good. I prefer the original. It's fun to listen to and kind of hear the new interpretations, but I would go back to the original if I really wanted to rock out to the Incubus.
Interesting that they did that.
And then last, but certainly not least, Eddie Rabbit. I picked up on vinyl his 1980 album Horizon. I was a big fan of I Love a Rainy Night, which is on this album.
Isn't this Bad Bunny's dad?
Maybe. Mix of country, pop, and rock. But why don't we listen to another hit off the album, Driving My Life Away. Ooh, yeah, he kind of had some crossover success in that soft rock area.
Yeah, I recognize this. Yeah.
I think he gets kind of overlooked, Eddie Rabbit. He's got beautifully coiffed hair and a nice trimmed beard. But yeah, it's a good record. It's got some really good country pop songs. And
it's kind of like country yacht rock. I don't know what that would
be. Yeah, I guess you could say that. But yeah, but go check out Eddie Rabbit. I don't think he gets enough attention.
All right. Well, what are you digging? Let us know. Join us on the social media, Facebook, Instagram, and Threads, and also on our website, albumnerds.com.
It will be a discovery of extraordinary value.
Well, it's about that time on the show when I'm reminded of the great American comic Jackie Gale, who said, Los Angeles is a great place. Where else can you smell the air and see it coming at you at the same time?
That's a smog joke.
With that in mind, bring out my friend and yours, Wadbot, and see what we'll be discovering on next week's episode.
The summer of Don continues. With that in mind, I will be choosing which albums from Don's curated list you will be exploring this summer. Next time, strap in for a true classic rock experience with The Who's 1971 album, Who's Next?
Oh, yeah. I'm excited.
Yeah.
So Who's Next is next. Excellent. What do you think of The Who's Next? Does Blood Sugar Sex Magik belong in the Album Nerds Hall of Fame? What else are you listening to? Leave a comment on our website or email us at podcast@albumnerds.com. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Threads at Album Nerds. Also, please subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcast app. And if you want to support the show, you can do so via PayPal at albumnerds.com/support.
Thank you so much for joining us on the Album Nerds Podcast. We'll catch you next time.
All right, thanks for listening, buddy. Catch you next week.
I'm here in the fields. I'm fum.
Nope. No. Damn it.
Teenage wasteland.
Oh, wow.
Sorry.
We appreciate the effort. Everyone does.